I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Chances are that a lot of people this time of year, with it being New Year's and all, vow to do better with managing schedules and being more productive. A new book shows us one person's year of thinking productively. He didn't just think about it, rather he did experiments that looked at aspects of increasing productivity. He looked at sleeping patterns and did one experiment where for weeks he went with little or no sleep. At another, he got up at 5:30 a.m. and wanted to see if the quality and quantity of his work increased. He'd work 90 hours a week for a spell and work less than 40 another. It's such a fascinating book, and Chris Bailey joins me now. I'll get him to tell us about why he embarked on this year of tests and what he's found out. He's got a lot of advice on how to be better at work. The book is called The Productivity Project, Accomplishing More by Managing Your Time, Attention, and Energy. Mr. Bailey's a graduate of Carleton, and his writing has appeared in various publications, including the New York Times, the Huffington Post, New York, Fast Company, and Life Hacker. The website for more is at lifeofproductivity.com. The book is published by Random House. Chris Bailey joined me from Toronto earlier this week. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Chris Bailey. Mr. Bailey, good morning.
Good morning. What an intro. Oh my gosh.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So at the beginning of each chapter, you have a count as to how long it'll take the reader to read it. Why did you do this?
I love knowing how long something is going to take. Maybe it's just this weird obsession that I have. And so the idea behind that is, you know, at the beginning of every chapter, I have an estimated reading time, which is based on an average word count of 250 words a minute, which is the average reading pace for a book this length. And I also have a takeaway for what somebody will get out of the chapter, because frankly, there's so much productivity stuff out there. I think it's important to prime your mind for the chapter to come. And also, you know, we have little gaps throughout our day when we can kind of fit stuff like this in. And it's cool to know how long something's going to take, because you might not have time for it.
Yeah, so one realizes that it shouldn't take us that long to read a book. And what I read in the book that was quite interesting is how important reading is for you in the course of your day, that despite how busy you are, you find the time, you make the time, I should say, to read.
Yeah, we all have the same amount of time. That's why it bugs me when somebody says they don't have time for something, because that's really just a way of saying how important something is to you. But I see reading as a way of kind of leveling up to understand the world a bit better, because it helps you become more creative and more productive. You know, creativity is just a process of connecting dots, in my view. And the more you read, the more dots you have to connect.
Yeah. So when you do put these reading times at the beginning of each chapter, it motivated me, because then I could read more. Because sometimes I read some quickly, and so I would beat the time.
Did you time yourself?
No, I just kept a look at the clock, that if this thing took 10 minutes and I did it in, say, 7 or 8, I was ahead of myself, and then I could get to the next chapter maybe. But then the other thing that happens is because of the way you write and the examples that you give, I got to procrastinate a little in some parts, that I would, say, put the book down and then look up something that you mentioned.
Yeah.
And then that would take my reading time, instead of, say, 10 minutes, to 15, 25 minutes.
Fall into a Wikipedia rabbit hole somewhere.
Yeah.
That's why one of my favorite things to do when I read, whatever it is that I'm reading, because distractions always come up, right? Regardless of what you do, distractions and interruptions always come up. So I like keeping a little notepad next to me whenever I read, and I keep a jot every single distraction that comes up so that I can deal with it later. Because oftentimes, you know, it derails you, these thoughts that we have over the course of the day, from what we're supposed to be working on, from what we intend to work on. And so I find that helps me whenever I want to dive into a book. My mind is always racing all day long. It's always doing stuff, as yours is too, probably. So it's cool to capture those thoughts and kind of be on with whatever is in front of you. And this works for work in general, too.
Yeah.
One of my favorite tactics out there when it comes to productivity, and I devoted a whole chapter of the book to this, is single tasking. You know, just working on one thing at one time, eliminating the distractions around you, limiting the interruptions, or at least as many as we can, to create the conditions where you have more attentional space around what you're working on in the moment. One of my favorite ways to keep that space, because you always have these things that come up, is by having this distractions list. So things always come up, but it's a matter, you know, productivity is a matter of what you do when they do.
Yeah, so I mean, we were told for years that we should multitask, and then but this idea of single tasking is important because there are things that we need to do that require one's full attention.
Yeah, and if you look at the way our brains are wired, you know, our brains are terrible multitaskers. Mm-hmm. We suck at it, frankly. And you can do things like walk and chew bubble gum, but you can't both focus on walking and chewing bubble gum. And that makes a huge difference in our productivity, is we can only consciously focus on one thing at one time. And it costs us attention and time to switch between tasks on the fly. Gloria Marx, she's an attention researcher. I forget where she teaches from. I always forget where people teach from, but at least I remembered her name.
Yeah.
She's found that when we're completely interrupted from something that we're working on, we can lose as much as 25 minutes of productivity because of that interruption. And so that makes taming these so crucial, but also creating the conditions where we just focus on one thing, so we don't, A, dilute our attention, but B, become less productive because of it.
And so what have you found in the course of writing this book in terms of why we procrastinate? Because it is easy to do that, we can make excuses why we do that. So people justify it somehow, right? They find a way of justifying it more than, say, getting the task done. So what happens in our head? Is there something that happens in our brains that allows us to do this?
There's actually something fascinating about procrastination and the tasks in our work. And it turns out there's certain triggers that a task can have, certain attributes a task can have, that make you more likely to procrastinate on it. And so those are whether a task is boring, frustrating, difficult, whether it lacks personal meaning, or whether it lacks intrinsic rewards, or whether it's ambiguous, or whether it's unstructured. And so those are a long and fast list, but mm-hmm. the idea is that the more of these attributes a task has, the more likely you are to put it off. And so take doing your taxes as an example. When you do your doing your taxes, it's boring, it's frustrating, it's difficult, it's ambiguous, it's unstructured. It has every trigger under the sun, which is why we put off doing it. And it's also not that meaningful unless you find meaning in giving money to the government, which not many people do.
No.
If they do, please let me know, because maybe you want to give me money too.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe let you know, let Joe know as well. But the more of these attributes a task has, the more likely you are to put it off. And, you know, you take something the opposite of doing your taxes, like watching Netflix. You know, watching Netflix, it's not boring. It's not frustrating. It's not ambiguous. It's not unstructured. It's so structured that you're presented with the next episode of a show before you're done watching the current one. That's how few triggers it has. And so by looking at the fact that you're procrastinating, first of all, noticing, because if you don't notice that you're procrastinating, it's hard to do anything about it. But noticing that you're procrastinating and using that as a cue to think about which of these attributes a task has, that's something huge you can do for your productivity. And once you notice that, and once you notice what triggers a task has, you can make a plan to flip them. And so, for example, doing your taxes, you can make it less boring by going to a coffee shop and doing them and ordering like a big expensive latte or something. You can make it less unstructured by researching the process of doing your taxes. And, you know, it might not ever be as possible to make doing your taxes as sexy of a task as watching Netflix, but I think you can come pretty close if you do things deliberately enough.
So if I'm watching Netflix and I see that the episode of whatever show I'm watching is about to finish and the next one's queued up already, I can see the time. You know, the next episode of whatever is 40 minutes, 42 minutes. Well, I can give that up. And then I should get back to Chris Bailey's book because I've got two chapters left. One's 8 minutes, one's 18 minutes.
Yeah,
so that's 20 minutes I can spend in the next hour. But see, you know, you get into these patterns, right?
Yeah.
So how, I mean, for people that come to you asking for help, breaking out of those patterns, I mean, is that as difficult as it might seem for people?
The interesting thing about procrastination is on a neurological level, it's a gap between our intention and our actions. And so, you know, only a robot achieves what they intend to 100% of the time. But when you kind of find yourself in that moment where you're considering, watching the next episode of something, chances are there's kind of an internal war raging on in your brain where one part of it wants to do the episode, one part wants to, read the book, and the two battle it out with one another. So what you can do in that moment is procrastination. The fascinating thing about it is that it's a purely emotional and visceral reaction to something that you have to do. And so there's no logic in it whatsoever. But by thinking about what you have to do logically, that takes effort in the moment, obviously. It's easier advice to give than it is to take. But when you fire up the logical part of your brain in that moment, you can overcome that urge to procrastinate. And one of my favorite ways to do this is to list the cost of something. It sounds so boring, right? Mm-hmm. But if you, have a notepad with you or you find a sheet of paper and list the costs of putting off watching that show on Netflix and say, never reading the end of the Productivity Project, chances are firing up that logical part of your brain will get you back on track.
And then the other thing that you suggest in the book is deadlines do work. If the taxes are due at the end of a month, we'll get it done, right? Because we don't get in trouble. So if I'd see that this happened on the weekend, because I had to finish your book in preparing for this interview, I had two pieces left. And so I timed it out. It was about 18, 20 minutes or so. Yeah. So I said, well, if I give myself half an hour, I'm prone to distractions. And then I'll procrastinate. Maybe I'll say, give myself 15 minutes to finish the 20 minutes of reading that I need to do. And by golly, I got it done. Mm-hmm. So shorter times, scheduling less times, that works. You've seen that work, right?
One of the experiments I conducted was working 90-hour weeks for a month. So for a full month, I alternated between working 90 hours one week, then 20 hours the next, then 90, then 20, to see how that affected my productivity. And I found that I accomplished about the same on both weeks. Hmm. And that was one of the biggest surprising lessons from any of the experiments. And part of it is because the work we have expands to fit how much time we have available for it. And so, this is why, we feel so busy and at capacity in our home life, but then the new season of House of Cards or Orange is the New Black drops, and then we magically find these 12 hours over the course of 3 or 4 days to watch the entire season. So part of it is that the work expands to fit how much time we have available for it. But part of it was that because I only had 20 hours over the course of a week, I felt insanely guilty during those weeks, but that's kind of a side point. Because I only had 20 hours, that forced myself to expend more energy over that shorter distance of time so I could get everything that I needed to do done. And this is, I think, a powerful idea when it comes to managing your time, is that managing your time is at the same time also a way of managing your energy. Because when you limit how much time you have to do something in, in your case, doing a task for 15 minutes instead of 30, that forces you to expend more energy over that shorter distance of time so you can get it done. This is why deadlines work so well. And so this is essentially a way of creating more structure around those tasks that, should have deadlines around them but don't.
So when you schedule less time, when you have less time in a week to work, I'm assuming social media and those distractions, those are out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah, and especially if you single task on the work in the moment, you find that you have the awareness to see what is important and what isn't important on a moment-to-moment basis. Because, it's on a moment-to-moment basis that we act on what we intend to. And, procrastination and productivity, in essence, is about bridging that gap between intention and action. Because, take New Year's as an example. We start off the new year forming these grand intentions. I want to lose weight. I want to get a six-pack. I want to do this. I want to do that. But 92% of people fail at the New Year's resolutions they make because they don't have that clarity and those strong intentions on a daily basis, and on a moment-to-moment basis. And that's, I think, when productivity is really made.
And so there was an experiment where you cut out social media, and how did you fare after that?
I felt so much more productive after cutting that out and limiting and how frequently I checked social media as well as email. Because the interesting thing about these support tasks in our work, like social media, like email, like things of that nature, is that they don't take up much time, but they take up an incredible amount of our attention. And whenever we focus on these types of tasks, we have to switch our focus from presumably something important to checking Twitter. Yeah. And that switching cost, I think, can be greater than people think. And so it's important to be careful with that because, you know, the main crux of productivity these days is that we don't only manage our time. You know, our attention and our energy are just as important. You know, if you have two people, and take attention as an example. If you have one person that dedicates 40% of their attention to their work and another person that dedicates 80% of their attention to their work, the person that focuses on their work twice as well and eliminates twice the amount of distractions, they're going to get twice the amount of work done in the same amount of time because doing work today involves so much of our mental capacity.
So after doing these experiments, as you did in the course of the year, which we can read about in this book, The Productivity
yeah.
Project, what have you found in terms of, say, how much time one should spend on social media? How much caffeine should one consume? How much sleep one would need? I mean, are there figures? Are there numbers that we ought to heed, perhaps? Or does it work for different people? I mean, I'm assuming it does.
Yeah, and this is the thing I think a lot of people miss the boat on when they talk about productivity, is that no piece of blanket productivity advice works the same for everyone. Mm. You know, take waking up early as an example. You know, some people are morning birds, some people are night owls, and they are wired that way to have more energy in certain times of the day. And so, you know, one of the things that I discovered in the project, you know, poring over all the research, all the literature, and interviewing so many executives for the project, so many quote-unquote productivity gurus, many who are self-described productivity gurus who, you know, gave themselves a title, is that no one piece of productivity advice will work the same for everyone. Everybody is wired differently. Everybody works differently. Everybody has different constraints in their work, too. So somebody who's an entrepreneur will have way more freedom and flexibility with when they work and how they work and what they work on than somebody who works on an assembly line, as an example. And so productivity is, at the same time, often a process of understanding the constraints that you have. And also with tasks like social media, it depends also how important those tasks are relative to the other tasks in your work. So somebody who's, you know, a marketing manager, as an example, you know, that might be a high return task in their work. So for every minute they spend on social media, they accomplish way more in that time than they do spending a minute on, you know, something else that somebody else might find important.
Yeah, like a guy digging ditches probably wouldn't get the benefit of checking Facebook and Twitter.
You wouldn't think, so unless you run like the best ditch digging account and it's going viral.
Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe that's our claim to fame, Joe. We should start a ditch digging at Twitter again.
Did you, before you started this, were you a morning person or?
No.
Yes.
No, I've always been a night owl. And that's why, you know, one of the experiments I conducted was waking up at 5:30 every morning. And after trying to shoehorn that habit into my life for 3 months and then doing it for another 3 months, you know, I thought I had a habit that productivity dreams are made of, you know, waking up at 5:30 and meditating and doing yoga and doing all these things. But then I realized, you know, productivity is about how much you produce or how busy you are. It's about how much you accomplish. That's what you're left with at the end of the day. And when I looked to how much I accomplished, instead of how busy I was, I realized that I accomplished less waking up so early. And that when I turned to the research, it backed that up as well. And you know, kind of verified that there's no difference in socioeconomic standing between somebody who wakes up early and somebody who wakes up later. It's what you do with the hours of your day after you wake up that make all the difference.
So you mentioned meditation. Is that something that you do regularly?
It is. I meditate for half an hour every morning. And I value my time so much and my productivity so much that I would have stopped long ago if it didn't make me more productive. But, you know, there is the research that has been conducted around meditation. It's done. It's conclusive. And it shows that there is hardly anything better that you can do for working out how much attention you can bring to the moment, working out that attention muscle so you can focus better.
And so after a year of doing all these experiments, did you so you found what worked for you, and you're you're obviously utilizing those tools. What are some of the other changes that you found in how you approach life since?
You know, the biggest thing that I kind of uncovered in the project was how important slowing down is to becoming more productive. And it's so counterintuitive, right? Because, you know, you think productivity is about doing more and more and more, faster, faster, faster. But, you know, the thing that this year of productivity taught me in the productivity project was that it's not about doing more and faster. It's about doing the right things deliberately and with intention. And that involves single tasking. That involves working more deliberately. It means planning a bit, but also working in the moment with as few distractions as possible. So much of my day is spent, you know, doing one thing at a time and doing that the best that I can.
You describe yourself in the book as an ambivert. Is that how you pronounce it? Yeah, and so for people that are listening to this that don't know what that is, that's sort of someone who is an introvert but also an extrovert, someone in the middle. Is that right?
Yeah, someone in the middle. Because you know, what we know about introversion and extroversion is that's not, you know, one or the other. It's not a one or a zero. It's somebody sits somewhere on that gradient, and it's very much a spectrum.
And so what's the connection between being, say, an introvert or an extrovert and how much caffeine one consumes?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because introverts are more stimulated by their environment by default. And so when I like to consume caffeine, I like to consume caffeine deliberately. You know, so much of productivity is about becoming more deliberate. And I think you can extend that to a lot of things. But, you know, caffeine is something that I think works differently for different, or I don't think this is what the research backs up. Because introverts are more stimulated by their environment by default, you know, drinking a big cup of coffee before they have a meeting with their vice president or before they do an important talk, it might cause too much stimulation in their minds. But an extrovert, on the other hand, or an ambivert, might do better with a moderate amount of caffeine, because that extra stimulation will actually translate to having more energy. And so it really does depend on the person how you react to caffeine. But this is, you know, this is kind of the crux of productivity, I think, is that it's about doing your work and in a certain sense your life more deliberately, not, you know, responding to whatever comes your way on autopilot and just working on whatever people send to your email inbox, but taking that step back to have that intention behind your actions and using things like that energy boost from caffeine wisely. Because, you know, the thing about caffeine is that I see it, you know, just as drinking alcohol is a way of borrowing energy and happiness from the next day, drinking caffeine is a way of borrowing some energy from later on in the day. And so you invariably crash after you consume caffeine. There's no way to circumvent that. And so by drinking it more strategically, you can bring it to the tasks that actually matter.
And it's fascinating in the book, because you have almost a timeline in terms of when in the course of one's day is the ideal time, the best time to consume, say, a cup of coffee or whatever caffeine products one consumes, as opposed to, say, well, after dinner or something like that.
Yeah, and oh man, I forget the exact hours on the spot, because I don't drink too much caffeine.
Yeah.
But do you have the hours in front of you?
No, it's sort of midday, before lunch, if you will.
I believe it's around 10:30 a.m. And it's because our cortisol levels are naturally the lowest then, because that's when we have it's when we naturally have the least amount of energy throughout the day.
And I find, you know, some days I'm more introverted than others. I will have a cup of coffee or some other caffeine drink, and that's fine. I mean, I'll take a nap right after, or I'll sleep well. But if I think about it, if I'm wired, say, then it'll keep me up for the next night or so.
Yeah, and caffeine is one of those weird things. You know, out of anything you can do to kind of stimulate you, everybody responds totally differently to caffeine.
Yeah.
You know, just take how long it takes to exit somebody's system. So some people eliminate the caffeine in their body in 6 hours. Some people eliminate it in, you know, 14 hours. Some people, you know, they have an extreme, you know, intolerance to caffeine that takes days for them to get rid of it completely. And so this speaks to the subjective nature of productivity, that every single person is different. And so in a way, so much of productivity is about being able to better know yourself.
Yeah. And I guess no better advice than just sticking with water, right?
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. One of the experiments I conducted was drinking only water for an entire month.
Yeah.
So I cut out all the liquor. I don't drink a ton to begin with.
Yeah.
All the alcohol, all the caffeine, all the sugary drinks from my diet. And let me tell you, after the first little bit, it didn't take too long to adjust because I don't consume a ton of caffeine, but I had more energy than I had had in so long, and especially after I cut out alcohol, especially on weekends. You know, I don't drink a ton, but I had more energy than any other time. And energy, you know, the connection between energy and productivity, I think, is quite simple. It's quite linear. You know, the more energy we have, the more fuel that we have to be productive every day. So it's crucial, I think.
So we all want to get to Zen, whatever that is, and it is different things for a lot of people, right?
Yeah,
and
whatever the heck that means.
Yeah, and so but just off the top of your head, just anecdotally, if you will, because it is the beginning part of a year, and we're all looking for to accomplish whatever goals we've set for ourselves. Where are we doing productivity wrong? And are there things that right off the top of your head you can see that say a piece of advice from this year that you've spent with all these tests that would say make ourselves more productive right off the bat?
I think it's so easy to form grand intentions, and that's why so many people make resolutions.
Yeah.
Because forming intentions is easy, but acting on them in the moment can be so difficult. That's the art of productivity, is acting on your overarching intentions in the moment, and that's when really you have to really act towards your goals. You know, it's one thing to form this beautiful sepia-toned intention of, you know, getting a six-pack by the summer and becoming vice president by the summer and all this stuff. But what that involves on a day-to-day, on a moment-to-moment basis, is making 1,000 small sacrifices every single day to get to the point. And usually you want conflicting things in one moment. You know, you want these things like to lose weight and become VP. But in the moment, you want nothing more than to play hooky and grab a cheeseburger. And so, you know, that's, I think, where productivity is made every day. And maybe a rule, kind of a tactical rule that I'll give people to walk away with, is the rule of three. And the rule of three is so simple. It's almost stupidly simple. And it goes like this. At the start of each day, fast forward in your head to the end of the day, to when the day is done, and ask yourself, when the day is done, what three main things will I want to have accomplished? And those become the three daily intentions that you have for the day. And I do this every morning. And I also keep a to-do list in conjunction with this. But these become my three primary focuses for the day and my three daily intentions, so that when everything hits the fan over the course of the day, because it always does,
yeah,
you can't stop certain obstacles from coming. You can see some of them, but you can't have visibility for others. When they do happen, I have kind of these guiding lights for what I want to accomplish. And the idea is that by stepping back to think about these three things, I create the space where I can consider my overarching goals and how I'm going to act on them on a daily basis. And I make three personal intentions, and I also make three business intentions at work every day.
Yeah, it's such a helpful book, Chris, and it's wonderfully written just fascinating, all these things that you got yourself into over the last
a lot of trouble
in the course of the year. Congratulations on this book, and good luck with it.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. AlifeOfProductivity.com is the website. The book is called The Productivity Project, Accomplishing More by Managing Your Time, Attention, and Energy. It's published by Random House. Its author, Chris Bailey, joined me on the line from Toronto and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.